Hello, this is your Polycast for Thursday, September 1st, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, the Metropolitan Council comes up with a stopgap plan for Southwest Light Rail Transit, and the Mills-Nolan congressional race is playing on a TV screen near you. Later today, the federal government will release the proposed premium increases in Minnesota's individual health insurance market for next year. Health insurance companies that serve Minnesota's individual market say they've suffered hundreds of millions of dollars in losses over the past few years. Last year, they saw double-digit price increases, with one carrier looking for more than a 50% increase. And more big hikes are expected for 2017. The proposed increases must be approved by state regulators before they can take effect. The rate increases would affect only the small portion of Minnesota's population that buys individual health plans, and for many, hikes will also boost federal subsidies that help pay for that coverage. The final pieces of a stopgap funding plan for Southwest Light Rail were put into place yesterday. The Metropolitan Council approved more than $100 million in interim financing after the county's Transit Improvement Board, a coalition of Twin Cities counties, approved $20.5 million for the project. On Tuesday, Hennepin County also chipped in $20.5 million. And reporter Tim Nelson is here now to tell us more about this whole thing. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Mike.
Southwest Light Rail. The legislature didn't come up with this final local chunk of the funding.
Right. That's the $135 million that they needed to earn the almost $1 billion in federal matching money for the Southwest line.
And that's why this action had to happen with the Met Council and the other counties over the past couple of days. What exactly is this? Is this a loan from the Metropolitan Council? Or is the council going out to sell bonds to raise this money?
Technically, the instrument's called a certificate of participation. It isn't a bond. It isn't debt. It's sort of an alternative financing mechanism. They use the same thing for the Senate office building, you might remember. And it has another sort of interesting element here. They don't plan to sell them until next summer, so no one may ever actually buy these things. It's basically a promise to the federal government that says when the really big bills start to come due on Southwest Light Rail, we will have the money in hand to take care of it. So go ahead and, you know, approve the full funding agreement that we're going to apply for next winter.
Okay, and so this was just so the federal government wouldn't give up and they wouldn't have to shut the door on the whole project.
That's pretty much basically the reason for it.
And so what happens, though, if the legislature, say Republicans keep control of the House, maybe Republicans win control of the Senate, and the legislature comes back next year and there isn't some kind of state-leveraged funding for this? Then what happens?
Well, a couple things could theoretically happen. One is the Dayton administration could sell these certificates of participation and get the money and keep the project on track. Unfortunately, there isn't a financing mechanism to repay them. The Met Council doesn't have the cash on hand to meet this debt obligation right now. The other thing is they could come up with some alternative financing. There could be a sales tax levied by the Metropolitan Council or levied by the counties or something like that that paid back these certificates somehow. The alternative is they could just shut the project down and let the would be almost $200 million that they've spent on the project so far go down the drain. That said, Mark Furman from Metro Transit said that they intend to place orders for light rail cars this fall. So it's kind of a big bet here they're putting down.
Wow. Well, that's really interesting. So, but for now, at least, the project continues. But there's still sort of a question mark out there about how they actually get this done.
I don't think it's sort of, Mike. I think that they are hoping that the extra time they've bought here will allow them to come up with some solution, some kind of agreement with the legislature that will finally put that money in place. But there's no sign of that money coming at this point.
Tim Nelson, thanks.
You're welcome.
For weeks now, Republican Stuart Mills has been hammering DFL Congressman Rick Nolan with TV ads in his effort to replace Nolan in Congress. An outside group that supports Democrats has come to Nolan's aid with ads attacking Mills. The early spending and negative tone may be just a preview of what's ahead between now and Election Day in the Nolan-Mills rematch in Minnesota's 8th Congressional District. Mark Zedeklik has the story.
If you watch TV and live anywhere near the Twin Cities or in northeastern Minnesota, you've very likely seen the Rick Nolan and Stuart Mills ads already.
Stuart Mills is still looking out for multimillionaires like himself.
So why did Rick Nolan vote against a pay raise for soldiers?
Most of them are coming from the Mills campaign, and Mills has been targeting his ads with a focus on mining in northeastern Minnesota TV markets that include the Iron Range.
Nolan supports an energy tax that would destroy even more mining and papermaking jobs. Rick Nolan is a job killer.
In the southern part of the district, closer to the Twin Cities, Mills' focus is different. One ad that aired a lot in August was about national security.
ISIS wants to infiltrate America, and they're using Syrians to do it. But Rick Nolan supports bringing 100,000 unvetted Syrians to America before the end of the year.
That ad about Syrian refugees led the Nolan campaign to respond with one of their own.
Stuart Mills is running another smear campaign.
Nolan was one of several dozen Democratic members of Congress who urged the president to settle 100,000 Syrian refugees in the U.S. by the end of the year. But after terrorist attacks in Paris, Nolan ended up voting for legislation that would have made it more difficult for Syrian refugees to enter the country. The Nolan campaign ad accuses Mills of mudslinging.
Mills broke his promise to run a positive campaign, spending millions on personal attacks.
University of Minnesota political science professor Larry Jacobs says in the coming weeks, voters should expect many more ads directly from the campaigns and even more from outside national special interest groups.
The 8th Congressional District is probably the most competitive congressional race in Minnesota and in the country.
Nolan defeated Republican Congressman Chip Kravac by almost 10 percentage points to win the seat in 2012, which, like this year, was a presidential election year. 2 years ago, Mills came within 2 percentage points of defeating Nolan when there was no presidential race. Common thinking is that with a presidential race this year, Democrats will turn out in large numbers, making it difficult for Mills to come close again. But Jacobs says it might be a different story this year.
The fact that we don't see much of a competitive presidential race in Minnesota and we have no Senate or gubernatorial races could well dampen the usual Democratic boost in turnout. All that works in Mr. Mills' advantage.
And there's Donald Trump. Unlike some other Minnesota Republican candidates, Stuart Mills is not distancing himself from the GOP presidential candidate. Jacobs says there's a reason for that.
If Donald Trump is going to have a positive effect in Minnesota, it's going to be up north. And Mr. Mills may be the greatest beneficiary of Donald Trump and his draw among the kind of angry white voter.
But Nolan can make the case that mining jobs are returning on the Iron Range because American steel is becoming more competitive following his efforts to crack down on Chinese steel dumping. And like Trump, Nolan is a vocal opponent of trade deals that have left some American workers behind. Still, Nolan acknowledges he's got a lot ahead of him in making his case for re-election.
I'm confident we're going to win again, but it's going to be tough. This is the toughest race I'll have ever had in my life.
For his part, Stuart Mills disputes the assertion he's gone negative. Instead, he says he's focused on important issues.
If we make those issues in our campaign and he says that that's a negative ad or that's a negative message, well, what he's really saying is that he's got a negative record.
Mills and Nolan meet for the first debate of their rematch in about 3 weeks in Duluth. Covering politics, I'm Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
By the way, Twin Cities TV station WUCW pulled an ad yesterday that was paid for by the House Majority PAC. The ad portrayed Mills as a millionaire interested in protecting other millionaires instead of helping the middle class. The Mills campaign said the ad was a misleading personal attack based on edited footage. Well, that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.